This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hello and welcome back to Equal Agenda. I'm your host, Roman.
And I'm Emmy.
And this is our last episode on the series.
No!
It's been, it's gone by pretty quick.
Yeah, we are a bit sad about having our last episode. It's been really, really fun to do all this research and get to kind of present our ideas and opinions with you, and to know that there's people actually listening out there. It's super special. And obviously, we'll do a little brief recap of everything we've learned, but I just want to start off by saying, like, a huge thanks to the YWCA and to Free FM for giving us this platform, because conversation is such a powerful tool and we need to be talking more, especially in this day of social media and technology. It's so easy to just kind of get locked into your own little thoughts, your own little bubble, but actually getting out there and having some in-person conversations or listening to, like, real people speaking, because, you know, like, with AI.
Well, it's like TikTok and algorithms that give you, like, you know, 3-second videos to watch. It's good to be able to, listen to people speak over longer periods of times and be able to engage with people in conversation, to have your ideas challenged.
Exactly. Because it's actually not beneficial to always be talking to people who agree with you. It's really important to get out there and kind of see why they think differently to you, or why they do think the same with you. And that's why I kind of mentioned the whole AI thing, because I think it's quite dangerous when a lot of people are coming with their issues or thoughts to chatbots that are just taught to feed back and agree with you. That's when we kind of get big issues in terms of people who always are going to think that they're right and they're not open. Yeah. You need to be open-minded.
I think a big thing about that as well is it's probably a little bit overblown, but like AI girlfriends and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, because AI is so sycophantic.
Yeah.
And it's like, it'll do anything to please you. And then people are projecting that onto the idea of like a girlfriend and having a girlfriend.
Yeah, girlfriend or boyfriend or partner. That reminds me of when we did the incel episode, and I know that a lot of people that, incels that do feel lonely online, they turn to chatbots. It's honestly quite scary.
Yeah. And it's like, AI definitely makes it worse. But even when chatbots were just like very, very early on in their development, you know, you'd have a chatbot based on a woman that could maybe give you like a couple unique responses. Even then, there have been stories of people like sort of falling in love with these things.
Yeah.
And it's upsetting. It's concerning because these people are projecting real feelings onto these robots, these machines. And that's inevitably going to impact on how they see others in real life, and in a lot of cases, how they see women, particularly in real life.
Yeah. This is such a tangent, but I'm just going to go with it, because something so scary. There was a man, I think it was in the States, he married his AI girlfriend, but he had a wife and children. He literally had a wife and kids. And imagine just one day your wife walks into the room, why are you down on one knee? Like, we're already married. And he's like, no, I'm proposing to my AI girlfriend. That is like, I feel sick. I feel so bad for that wife, and I also feel so bad for the man. But imagine how disheartening that poor lady must feel. Like, what is wrong with me? What is missing from me to make my husband go out and seek a relationship with a chatbot? And I would assume that it's because they actually couldn't have had a real conversation about issues within their, like, marriage relationship. I don't know. I'm kind of hypothesizing, but that's what I would assume.
I definitely think communication would have been a big thing. But also, I think, more so, it's like, AI is really, like, it wants to please a lot. So you'll never have, like, an argument with AI, you know? AI is not particularly its own individual person. So this guy is saying that he prefers an object that can please him, like, emotionally and, whatnot, over a real person with their own feelings, with their own aspirations, that a woman shouldn't be there. A woman should be like an AI. A woman should just constantly look to please you. And that, to me, sort of like, yeah, it makes me uneasy.
Yeah, definitely uneasy. So on that kind of note, we will just be going over some of our favorite things that we've learned and all the topics that we've covered, because we've covered a lot and you guys have been around for the ride. So if you guys remember, our first topic that we covered was war and like masculinity of conflict kind of vibe.
Yes.
So that was our war, what is it good for episode. And I certainly learned a lot during that episode. I had no idea there were so many like female-led rebel groups. And through my research, I also learned that like a lot of now in conflict zones, like women are being conscripted as well as men, like forced conscriptions. I didn't know much about that. So that was really cool. Well, I wouldn't say cool, but interesting to learn about.
Yeah, I think it ties into what we talked about last episode of the past of feminism, but also with this episode, the Hittites, which were an ancient group of people, they were sort of, it wasn't particularly equal in a lot of ways, but women were allowed to join the military. So women, you know, a few thousand years ago, they were allowed to go and fight in wars and whatnot, which is interesting to see. Even, you know, lacking certain other kinds of legal rights and protections, it wasn't seen as a problem for women to go off and fight and die in wars, which is interesting. Another interesting thing about that was sort of the role of women not so much in conflict, which itself is interesting, like why women are more active in insurgent groups, particularly like left-wing groups, but women's role in peace. So, yeah, this was, I think, a figure that I brought up in the episode was that in a study, it was found that when women are meaningfully involved in a peace in the peace process, it was something like, I can't remember the percentage, but these peace deals, these peace agreements were significantly more likely to actually last longer than 15 years.
And succeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's that. I enjoyed learning that because as someone who's like quite against war and I don't like see a particular use, like I don't think it's super beneficial, it was interesting to learn about the ways in which conflict have areas that can be empowering to women, I guess. That was interesting to learn. And then in our next topic, we learned a lot about what it means to be a sportswoman or like women and gender in sport. We had Tash on as a guest. That was so cool. We were so lucky to have her on.
That was really interesting, yeah.
Yeah. I definitely learned a lot about like kind of marketing and like viewership, sponsorship issues and how men get a lot more recognition in that area. That was quite interesting.
I think definitely with the traditional media especially, like it's difficult, Tash said, to get like sponsors, whereas like men's teams would be fully funded like, you know, instantly. But with the rise of things like streaming and sort of crowdsourcing online, you realize that actually people do want to watch women's sports and people fund these things when, you know, even if they have to go out of their way and do it like out of their own pocket, you at this point you can go around sponsors and you can get just people who are able to access streaming platforms, even on places like Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, places like that where you can stream women's sports and you get massive viewership.
Yeah. It was also, I really enjoyed learning that a lot of social attitudes towards women in sport have definitely changed. Because I remember when I was a young girl and I always used to get so angry when people were like, you can play really well for a girl. And like talking to Tasha and actually realizing that when she gets to that elite level, she doesn't actually face that as much. It was quite reassuring to
that
hear.
That was nice to hear.
And then after that, we had some more guests come on. We had Kayla and Agatha for our Indigenous Insights episode. That was just so much cool knowledge in the room. I really enjoyed that episode.
Yeah, it was. I think it's important as well, highlighting just how significantly colonialism has impacted Indigenous people, and particularly Indigenous women, like we talked about. There were like structures around gender, sexuality, like whawhawhine or whakawahine, that essentially become dismantled and forgotten under colonial rule. And now, you know, a lot of Indigenous identities are lost or have to be rediscovered.
Yeah. I really liked learning about how how Kayla found it like quite empowering to do a full immersion Te Reo Māori course. That was super inspiring. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that we're actually able to live in a place where you can sort of reclaim that, you can take that back, because in a lot of places that's still very hard to do, if not impossible. So especially in Central America, in some parts of Europe especially. I don't think this was a thing that we touched on in the episode, but there was, in France especially, this is something I'm more well placed to know about, in Brittany, which is a region in the north west of France that had been colonized by the French previously, they are currently sort of eroding the culture and language of the Bretons. And there was an affair recently, about a decade ago, in France where a couple tried to name their child a Breton name. And in the name, there's a little accent on the E, you know, the little tilde above the E that you sort of see in Spanish as well. Mm. They wanted to name their child with that tilde in their name. And they weren't allowed to by the French, because the French had a very sort of like central national system of like language, and you couldn't register this name because the character wasn't recognized. And so they fought a massive legal battle just so that they could name their child in their own language.
Wow.
And so it's still going on. Even on the European continent, they're still colonizing not colonizing themselves, but they're still colonizing on the European continent. And that's a thing that I don't think a lot of people talk about when it comes to colonialism, is actually the colonialism that the Europeans did to themselves.
Yeah.
And that they continue to do, because a lot of people at this point have sort of like forgotten about it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I don't know much about that, so that's interesting to hear. I guess, and then moving on from the Indigenous Insight episode, we looked at, is there a right way to be a feminist, or are you doing feminism wrong? Which I guess we kind of came to the conclusion that there's not necessarily a right way to be a feminist, but there's most definitely some wrong ways.
Yeah.
And yeah, that kind of just includes like TERFs and
Just most forms of exclusionary feminism, even forms of feminism that explicitly exclude men. Although, you know, somewhere deep down, I kind of get it. I think that it's ultimately not particularly well thought out, because feminism, it's about liberation.
Yeah.
And you can't do that if you're actively going to marginalize other groups. That's not liberation, that's oppression.
Yeah. And just kind of on that, I think a big message that I would send from that episode, just you don't have to fit into a certain mold to claim to be a feminist. Again, I remember like thinking, oh, I can't wear lipstick, I can't wear makeup or high heels or dresses, because then I'm going to be seen as too feminine and I won't be taken seriously if I'm trying to fight for like the rights of women. That is just a bunch of crap that the patriarchy wants you to think to stop more women from standing up for themselves. So just do whatever you want, but include everyone. Like, if that makes sense. You can't be for the equality of women without being for everyone, like for all women.
Yeah.
And then what did we learn about after that? We learned about the exact opposite of feminists. We learned about incels.
Hooray.
Yeah, I don't really have anything positive to say apart from in that episode, we just kind of talked about how, like, it's important to talk about it, to be aware of the dangers of it.
And it's not particularly new, the sort of incel violence that we're seeing. It's just another name for patriarchal violence, for violence against women. A lot of countries still lack protections against gender-based violence. So I think it was Germany recently had to pass a law that specifically included provisions for femicide. That's what they called it. So actual targeted violence, like the killing of women because they're women. And I feel like that's like too little too late, honestly.
Yeah.
This should be a thing that, like,
bare minimum.
It's bare minimum. Like, this should be like a first wave feminism thing. You should have it like established that, yeah, killing women because they're women, that I don't know, that seems to be something that should be intuitive. But no, it's something that a lot of countries still lack, is crimes like femicide. I feel like it's horrible.
Yeah. Scary is what it is.
It is scary because it's like, it's continuing. You have some countries that are trying to respond to it. like France, they enshrined abortion in their constitution to sort of protect against the sort of backlash against women's rights, the rolling back. But it's not, like, it's just not enough. We are still lacking in a lot of areas when it comes to action that's actually protecting women, that's actually championing their rights. And the incel movement is actively damaging that. You have these people who are misled by an ideology that tries to make them feel included, if anything.
Yeah, and I guess the message from that is, yeah, like with the whole too little, too late, if you feel like someone you know is going down the path of like Andrew Tate-esque, rein them in, get them somehow, be like, dude, what are you doing? This is effed up.
Mm.
Yeah, let's not be listening to those types of men that are for the abuse of women.
Yeah, it's important to challenge it wherever you see it, because otherwise these people aren't going to get other opinions from anywhere else. They're, the reason that they believe in these things is because they're stuck in echo chambers online.
Yeah, so challenge anyone who thinks that women are just there to be your property.
Mm.
Moving on from that, we looked at the ongoing relationship between feminism and the LGBTQIA plus community.
Yeah, and I mean, it sort of touches on the point that we already talked about with sort of turfism and stuff, but it is intimately connected to the liberation of women, so the queer liberation, I should say. Intersectionality is a sort of, you know, it's integral, I think, to feminism, and part of that is gender and sexuality, along with things like race and class. You can't make a liberation movement without the liberation of everyone.
Yeah.
And queer people have contributed significantly to women's emancipation, to women's liberation, because ultimately, even if you look at, say, let's just look at like gay liberation, there are connotations of gay men with femininity, and often a lot of gay men will engage in activities, say, like drag. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're a gay man, to be clear, but they're typically associated with high levels of femininity, whether that is true or not. And that's part of the reason why they become sort of discriminated against, disparaged in society, is because of that association with femininity, which shouldn't be attributed to men, in quotes.
Yeah, the two go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. And I think that they're also like stronger when you work together, because there's power in numbers. And yeah, why would you, if you're feeling oppressed, why would you not want to also stand up for other people that are feeling oppressed? Because you know their pain. Not necessarily you know their pain, but you know how painful it can be to be oppressed and go through these systems of society that have kind of put you on the back step. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that the way that we're going right now for the rights of queer people, with especially the rise of turfism, particularly in the UK, I think it's the wrong direction. If you look at most of the people who are championing these movements, like you could trace most things like transphobia back to about like 60 people who are parts of like interest groups or have significant campaigns, like J.K. Rowling, who funds a bunch of anti-trans organizations with the funds from her Harry Potter series, by the way. but like, yeah, it's, and the, what is it? What, it's rich, like white women who live in a first world country who are like the champions of this ideology. So it's a kick in the face, spit in the face, but no, it's a kick in the face to like intersectionality, I think.
Literally. Then we had Our Body, Our Choice, Women in Medicine / Science episode. That one was really cool. I learned a lot. I liked doing all the research about hysteria because hysteria is just absolutely ridiculous. Like, yeah. Who allowed that?
Who came up with that? Like, honestly, who's...
That's crazy.
It's the same kind of thing where you're like, you know, you can understand that maybe in the Stone Age, people were trepanning each other. They were digging holes in each other's skulls to let, like, bad spirits or bad air out of their head.
Yeah.
Like, sure, this isn't that. This is, like, thousands of years later. This is, like, the 1800s that are coming up with these ideas, and it's just as ridiculous. It's, like, you got to sort of... you got to do better. It's not scientific at all. They try to portray it as scientific, but if anything, there's just like a bunch of like toddlers playing doctors where they just come up with these ludicrous ideas in order to justify marginalizing women. It's not like they're looking for answers scientifically. They're not starting from like a point of inquiry and then finding out through the scientific process. No, they are motivated by the idea that women are inferior, and then they're basing their science around that.
Yeah. And as much as we like to think, oh, hysteria is so much in the past, like no one would do something as stupid as that, it wasn't until like this year, a couple of months ago, that the actual first full nerve map of the clitoris was done. So there's still so much of a gap within the female medical field. There's so much more research to be done and so much more support for women that are suffering from like stuff like endometriosis, PCOS, PMS, PMDD. We need to recognize that so many symptoms have been dismissed or diagnosed too late. Then we had most recently, we had the Back to the Future episode, which is about the past, the present, and the future of feminism, where we're kind of going, where we've been. Are we going back to where we've been? Are we going forward? Are we going back? Are we going sideways? Upside down, maybe? I don't know.
Definitely back, I think. In most places, definitely back.
Yeah.
Presently, we have some places that are trying to make some progress. In fact, I think, I don't know if I've touched on this in any of the episodes, but while we like to think of women's rights as this sort of process that happens mostly in the first world or the developed world, which itself is a flawed assumption, but recently, especially recently, more often, you see global south countries, so the sort of developing world, is actually leading the way in terms of women's rights. Like they're cooperating with each other more effectively and more often than global north countries do. The West is actually lagging behind. Most of them are rolling back women's rights. So we actually should be looking to the example of these countries in the global south that are actually, in the absence of any sort of leadership or examples set by countries in the West, like the UK and Australia, have sort of published statements saying that they want to be like global leaders and set an example in terms of women's rights. They're not doing that. In fact, the UK has cut billions of dollars of funding for their international assistance programs for women at the request of the US so that they can increase their military spending. And this is a country that says we want to lead by example. So right now, it's the global south, it's the developing world that's leading the way in terms of women's rights development.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a lot of, in terms of the political realm, there's so many promises thrown out and about, but we actually have to act off what is happening right now. Mm-hmm. And yet there's so many women who are suffering and feeling the consequences of, the cost of living in New Zealand right now. Yeah, there's so many womaning. There are so many women suffering in Aotearoa today, right now, and there doesn't seem to be any plans of support in place. And so what I say to that is get out there, vote, vote, vote. Let's, instead of going backwards, let's try go forwards, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we're at a point now where we've made significant progress on women's rights, on human rights in general, and we should keep that up as long as we can. Who knows what the future is going to be, if I'm honest. I couldn't tell you if, you know, our future has this perfectly egalitarian society. We've had really egalitarian societies in the past, and then, you know, those are gone within a few hundred to a few thousand years. So it's a long game, I think.
Yeah. And it can be quite exhausting looking at, like, is it even worth it? We're going back to how things were. But no, you can't think like that. We have to look forward, and we have to, like, if this season has taught you anything, there's so much history within feminism and the feminist movement, and it would be a dishonor and a disservice to those that came before us to just give up now. So let's keep going. Stay strong. That's all I've got to say. Thank you to Free FM for giving us this platform. It's been an honor this season. Thank you, YWCA. They're amazing. Check them out. Yeah, that's all from me. I've been Emmy. Roman, what do you want to say?
Honestly, yeah, I mean, the same thanks. Thanks to 3FM for letting us actually host this program. I think it's really important to get these ideas out there and to actually have a meaningful discussion. And thank you to the YWCA for everything that they do for girls and women in New Zealand, everything they have done and everything that they will do. I think that's a bit fitting, considering the theme of the last episode. But we hope that you will continue to listen to Equal Agenda, that you've listened to the series before us, that you've listened to this one, and that you'll listen to the one that comes next to that comes after us.
Yeah.
That'll be about voting and the elections, which will be interesting.
Yes. Thank you so much, and ka kite.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.